Thank you, Dr. Lyle. I always enjoy coming to Boston because my name sounds like that of the mayor's, so I get treated very nicely because they assume that I have some pull, which I don't. Actually, it's spelled slightly different, but it sounds the same. And I also like to thank the organizers for putting this session together. And so how do I advance here? Is there a some sort of secret how to advance the slides here?
This button?
Yeah.
The arrows.
Okay. There's a secret code that I was not aware of, but now I am. Okay. So this is my research group. These are my disclosures. Of note, I am on the board of directors of the CUPD Foundation. And this is what I will be going over today. Basically, starting out with some definitional issues within CUPD, and then I'll be looking at both global and U.S. estimates of some of these different measures of CUPD, and then showing how perhaps we use some of these estimates to inform us on some important current and perhaps future trends in CUPD as we look at some of this variability. And this is a recent 2011 definition of CUPD. I just put this up here just to try to put things in context. I could read the entire definition, but then everybody would fall asleep because it's not terribly interesting. But there are components in here that I think have some importance. And some of the problems that have emerged is that, depending how people have interpreted these various components, then has huge amounts of impact on how one actually counts the disease. But certainly there's components of what's called airflow limitation, which is how much air gets into and out of the lungs, how this then relates to pathologic changes, and then how this relates to what clinicians can actually measure and count. And actually, CUPD is a term that hasn't gotten a whole lot of public awareness up until more recent years, although people were very aware of the term emphysema. But if we go way back in time, back probably to the late 1950s, how CUPD was defined was this sort of overlap here. And even going back to this, in respiratory medicine, we love these overlapping circles. So we have chronic bronchitis, emphysema, and asthma. Asthma is actually a part of CUPD. And then there's these other concepts, looking at airflow obstruction, which is a measure of how much air goes into and out of the lungs and whether that's reversible or not. And back when I was in medical school, this was the definition of COPD, which were people who had evidence of chronic bronchitis or emphysema and also had evidence of airflow obstruction. And about the mid-90s, it sort of morphed into this, which was people who had evidence of irreversible airflow obstruction. And then changed into this, maybe if you have, whether your obstruction is either reversible or irreversible. And then we sort of, added in this piece, and people who have both chronic bronchitis or emphysema, they probably have COPD. I've added this part that I think it's all COPD. Again, and this is my bias that, if you have a problem where you can't breathe, what we actually call it may be less important than the fact that you actually have that problem. And then I add it, this is my favorite group, people who they don't quite meet any of these definitions but are still abnormal. And this may be perhaps one of the most understudied groups. And this is sort of where we're going now. That I'm actually interested in looking perhaps at some of these different these different groups phenotypes. Those of you that are working in asthma, that's actually you're actually working in CUPD. You haven't quite realized it yet, and I'll get into that later on. If you look at what are the risk factors that are associated with COPD, they are listed here, and you can't read them. But the one that, of course, in the U.S. gets the most attention is down here at the bottom, which is, does this pointer work? Well, it works, but perhaps can't see it there. Well, that's okay. Down the bottom is smoking, which is certainly in the U.S. the predominant risk factor for COPD, and occupational exposures. But there are a host of other ones up above that, including one's genetics, exposure to indoor and outdoor air pollution, dietary factors, tuberculosis, early respiratory infections, that all of these relate to the development of COPD. So with that, I'll now launch into some of our estimates of prevalence. And as promised, we'll start out with some of the global estimates of how much COPD is out there in the population. Blue bars here are men, pink bars are women. And these are data from a combination of both the GOLD and the Platino studies that looked at variation in different countries around the world. And what I want you to focus on is the huge variation that estimates in South Africa to the far left are more than four times the estimates. And this was done using the exact same methodology. So more than four times what was seen in Mexico. That in most parts of the world is predominantly a disease that's more common in males, although in some countries, including the U.S., which actually this was not quite the U.S., this was my site in southeastern Kentucky, which is not even representative of Kentucky, let alone the entire U.S., and similar, all these other, although the country is listed, these were not national estimates. But there were some, four of these countries where women had more COPD than men. And these are our data. If you look at variation in the U.S., and this comes from the wonderful current COPD surveillance report that Dr. Croft and Dr. Ford from CDC put together. And this is a map that, again, is showing variation in COPD prevalence. So there is sort of a COPD belt that you can see in the middle, basically in the southeast part of the country, including my state of Kentucky is at the epicenter there. And if you actually compare this to smoking prevalence, which is the slide to the right here, that it looks rather similar. See, you can sort of see, and even Nevada sort of sticks out there. So again, in the U.S., a lot of what we see with COPD is a reflection of smoking. However, with that, COPD is not merely a disease of smokers. And in another analysis of at least the of the BOLD data, looked at COPD in people who have never smoked. With estimates that a proportion somewhere between probably 3 and 10% of the never smoking population has evidence of COPD, and more commonly seen in women than men in most countries. Now, if you actually flip this around the other way and look at the proportion of people who have evidence of COPD who have never smoked, and you get estimates that are somewhat higher. And on the far left-hand side here, we had estimates from the U.S. looking at the Haynes data, where 25% of people who have evidence of obstruction, so they meet our definition of COPD, have never smoked. And this estimate goes much higher. That highest number there, which is almost 50%, is in South Africa. And again, this highlights there are factors other than smoking that are globally important as predictors of COPD. And what are some of those factors? Well here is one here. This is biomass smoke. And people who use biomass fuels such as wood, straw, cow dung, coal to heat their homes or cook their food have an increased risk of developing lung diseases. And we can see that that in certain countries, particularly sub-Saharan Africa and large parts of Asia, the use of biomass fuels is rather common. And this has been looked at in a number of different studies. And you can imagine that living in one of these smaller homes where people are cooking indoors can make for an incredibly smoky environment. And if you actually look at estimates, these are data from China that looked at evidence of grade 2 or higher COPD, found that, and this was in women who had never smoked. So women who lived in rural areas where they exposed to biomass fuel were 3 to 4 times more likely to have evidence of COPD than women who did not have that exposure. Other important factors, this comes from Bert Lamprecht's study that I alluded to earlier, looks at COPD, and this is never smoking men, never smoking women, look similar. But I want to focus on here was this risk factor of asthma, where in essence, if you have a history of asthma and you're a never smoker, as you age into adulthood, your chance of being found to have COPD increases by a factor of 2 to 3. Actually, the odds ratio on this is about 3.5. And in fact, this has now been looked at in several different studies that in this one, a history of childhood asthma amongst both men and women increased the likelihood of stage 2 or higher COPD in an adult population between 4 and 10-fold. And to put this into perspective, from this same study, comparing these exposures, so these childhood factors such as asthma or early respiratory infections, to that of cigarette smoking, that this actually was higher. I had a higher estimate of risk, which was 6-fold higher compared to about 4-fold higher for smoking. And why is this important? Well, it's important in part because of this, and these are data that this comes from Andrea Gershon's group in Toronto, but it's basically looking at estimates of disease burden, looking at various different diseases, and what you see in the green line is the risk of asthma. And this is asthma through a lifespan, and the blue lines here are COPD. And what I believe what we will be seeing over the next 30 to 40 years is that, particularly in countries like the U.S., we're going to see an increasing proportion of the population who has COPD that is related to asthma rather than smoking. Already, as we've seen, as we've gone from Haynes 3 to the current Haynes data, that the proportion of never smokers with COPD is starting to creep up a little bit. I think it went from 22% to about 26%. And I think as we follow that forward, we're going to see changes. We're now going to do something different and look at hospitalization data. And this is also another study that came from CDC that now looks at COPD hospitalization rates by county. And something that I think to highlight on, when you go from state-level data to county-level data, you get a richness that shows more variation. And what was then done in the study is that they used various smoothing techniques to look at which of these how much of the variation that is seen county to county is related to regional factors, and as you can see, a large portion of this variability is related to regional factors that most likely represents regional smoking levels and the like. But not all of it is related to regional levels. In fact, there are some sort of hot spots that are related perhaps to other factors. And I also wanted to show that, and this is actually smoking by county, and these are data from 2000. And I put this up here to demonstrate that this is far less impressive than the variation we see in COPD hospitalization by county. So again, perhaps highlighting that there are other factors. And for the final piece of my talk, we will look at mortality. And these look at global data. COPD is currently the number four killer in the world, and it is projected over the next few years, it will go up to the number three killer in the world. And this comes from a recent review in Lancet. If you look at estimated mortality due to chronic respiratory diseases, now this comprises both COPD and other measures of chronic lower respiratory disease, that again, those same countries that I previously showed you where you have a great deal of biomass fuel use are also those countries where you see higher respiratory disease mortality. Although if you just limit it to the developed world, which this slide does, there are some countries, in the U.S. being the sixth from the bottom there, where the COPD mortality is actually higher than what you see in other parts of the developed world, suggesting there are other factors. Now, one of the things I was interested in was looking at data, and these are data from that I pulled from the Global Burden of Disease Project, where we just looked at the 80 most populous countries that actually have high quality mortality data. And these are arranged in order from lowest to highest. And then sort of plotted these data out against the overall mortality rate per country. And then I did something different and did one as a percentage of the other, and then drew in this line myself. And again, what I think we are going to see is that as overall mortality rates globally drop, we're going to see the relative portion of deaths that are related to obstructive lung diseases increase. Because you have to die of something, and as we've done a better job, as I'll show you, as you look at data from the U.S., as you do a better job of decreasing cardiovascular mortality, we're going to see other causes of death. And this in part, and you should remember this from your early epidemiology classes, which is the demographic transition as we've gone from high birth and death rates to low birth and death rates, that corresponds to what's called the epidemiologic transition, going from from predominantly infectious disease that kill people at a relatively high rate to chronic diseases. And in fact, if you look at what's happened in the U.S., and this actually was just published in New England Journal recently, that COPD is that purple bar towards the end there, and I'll sort of I'll blow it up for you a little bit. But in essence, as overall mortality in the U.S. is dropping and survival is improving, diseases of survivors, and COPD is in fact a disease of survivors, that if you don't die of heart disease and you have a constellation of risk factors, you may well die of chronic respiratory disease. And I think this is something that we're also going to see into the future. These are, again, some maps from the COPD surveillance study, again showing how differences in COPD mortality by state over time. There are some states actually had an increase in mortality, and those are the dark states here. But I wanted to go back to this slide and show the difference between a state-based measure and then what the map looks like when you look at county-level data. Again, sort of compare the slide on the right to now this one where we have county-level data, where you get much more richness in what is being seen, and that this actually may be something that is rather informative. And this is actually a project that Majid Azadeh and others who are part of the Global Burden of Disease Project have taken a look at. Because, again, if you sort of look at this map and then compare it to this one, to the map up top there, that looks at altitude, that you see sort of interesting pattern that sort of swath through the higher elevation areas of the Midwest that corresponds to altitude. And Azadi's group then became interested in looking at how altitude influences health, and looked at both life expectancy in men and women with regard to altitude. So the gray bars, ACHR, are the relative proportion of the population living at each altitude, crossed by life expectancy. And what they found is that as you have populations at altitude, that the relative risk of COPD death is higher. So you can see those sort of white circles above the line, both for men and women, although the risk of ischemic heart disease is lower in these populations. But again, perhaps you're looking at an interesting effect of altitude. And when people go to altitude, your blood oxygen level is actually lower. So if you have underlying lung disease, it makes it even worse. And you're more likely to develop complications such as pulmonary hypertension. So with that, these are the take-home points that, and I said COPDs intentionally because I think there's probably more than one chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. There are multiple phenotypes of disease that we factor in there. And although certainly in the developed world, cigarette smoking is important. In other parts of the world, other factors are important. And I think asthma is going to emerge as a very important risk factor into the future. And certainly, I think there's some evidence for a role for altitude, and also this phenomenon of a survivor effect, that as globally mortality rates start to decrease, we're going to see differential mortality in people dying of respiratory disease. So here's my final take-home point. COPD is preventable and treatable. I drive around Kentucky with my COPD license plate. It's my personal public awareness campaign, and we are known for our lovely horses. Thank you.